Welcome to Music Industry Insights. My name is Evan Murray. You can reach me at evan@musicindustryins.net. You can ask me questions, write me comments. Don't spam me. Let me know how your day is doing. This podcast is about the music union and how it functions. I find it a little bit surprising when I thought about it. I don't even know what the music union was about or what they were capable of, you know, until after this interview. And I mean, this conversation, it doesn't just scratch the surface. Like we dig pretty deep, but you still got to imagine the potential of what the music union can actually offer. I mean, you know, they can potentially change a lot of the way the music industry works for the better if a lot of people work to collaborate on ideas together as well. These guys are at the center, the epicenter of the music industry, and they're all over the place. You know, like that's the other thing. Like they got offices everywhere. So this is super important to hear what they're doing, hearing what they're up to. We have one person that's in a high place of power, actually the vice president for Canada's role in the union. And we have a representative from the province of Newfoundland. So these offices are everywhere. Like you're going to hear all this in the conversation, but these offices are all over the place, all over Europe, all over Canada, all over the USA. They got major bucks, you know, behind them. Like they collect union fees, obviously. I mean, this is everything legal. I mean, you can go to them with strategies, but I mean, of course they want to work across. I think for major things. Also, but I mean, they can help individuals, obviously, with knowledge about touring. They have databases of management and agencies and everything like this. I mean, it's really hard for me to understand how, if you're trying to make a living in the music industry or you are actively making a living in the music industry, if you don't belong to the music union, before you form an opinion, right? Like I always hear people with so many opinions that don't actually know, they just have they have a biased view of what they're having an opinion on. The union is a great example of this. Like people that don't know much or anything about the union, they already have all of these assumptions. It's such a weird, they already have this instilled belief system. You know, they have these belief systems maybe from their own union that they worked for, you know, working in a warehouse or something. And then they just transfer these beliefs over. Or people, you know, they see a fee attached to something like, oh, look, it's like a membership fee. Look, they're ripping us off. Or look, what am I going to get for my money? I mean, this is why I made all of these podcasts. This is why I traveled through every part of the music industry so that we could actually hear it from the mouth of the people who are doing, you know, specific jobs. So we listen to agencies and we listen to rock stars and we listen to entertainment lawyer and PR people and festival organizers. And now here we are and we can listen. We can actually listen from the mouth of the people that work for the union, that want you to join the union and work for you. So I've been thinking a lot about it. I've been thinking about a lot how I can utilize the union, what kind of things I could do with the music union. And it's something that interests me a lot. And I think after you listen to this podcast, listen to this conversation, take what you can out of it, extract the information, I think you'll find it very interesting too. Enjoy it.
Today I have two guests from the music unions, both situated in North America. I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves today. I'm going to start off with Roslyn. Roslyn, how you doing? Good morning. And please tell us what you do.
Good morning, Evan. It's so lovely to be on your podcast. Thanks for inviting us to join in. My name is Rosalind McPhail. I am the Vice President and Executive Director of the American Federation of Musicians of the United States and Canada, Local 820 in Newfoundland and Labrador. So I wear many hats and just feel so honored that I get to serve our music community. It's fantastic.
Okay, and I have another guest here as well. Alan, please introduce yourself.
Yes, thanks for having us, Evan. I really appreciate this. My name is Alan Willard, and I'm the AFM Vice President from Canada of the American Federation of Musicians of the United States and Canada. In Canada, we operate as the Canadian Federation of Musicians, and that's just simply because when you're lobbying government for various things involving musicians, that they often wonder why there's an American in the room, because they don't get it that it's an international union. So we've just changed the descriptor for how we operate here, and that smooths it over with the politicians a little better.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have a Canadian office, and basically, you know, we look after all things Canadian, because the laws, of course, are different in Canada in terms of labor and various other things. Excuse me. And the you know, the primary function of our office is to provide all of the same services that our New York and Los Angeles offices do, with a Canadian slant on it. And especially when it comes to immigration, which is one of our one of the things that is a benefit of membership, is the fact that we have a reciprocal agreement with our U.S. counterpart, which allows us to move back and forth across the border and obtain work visas by virtue of the fact that we're a single union. But I can get into that part later on.
That's really interesting. I mean, well, there's a lot of interesting things about this. First of all, yeah, thank you both for being here, because I think that the music union is a bit of a mystery to a lot of musicians. And I myself, like, I was a touring musician years ago, and it was a mystery to me until I was pointed in that direction at some point. Because, you know, going into the United States, I was like, oh, how do I do this? And then that's when I became aware, let's say, of the American Federation of Music. Now, let me ask you this. Why is it like it's branded AFM, right? It's branded AFM. Like, is there any like consensus to have that, like NFM, maybe, you know, like North American Federation of Music, or, you know, like, so how do you guys differentiate yourselves, just in the emails, or like, say if I'm a musician, I'm going to tour in Europe, I'm going to tour in the United States, I'm Googling American Federation music. Like, what am I Googling if I want to find you guys? What am I doing?
You can use both. The American okay. Federation of Musicians of the United States and Canada is the proper name of the organization.
Oh, okay. But the acronym is just the AFM, and then...
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And for, you know, expediency's sake. And this has come up many times at our triennial conventions, to modify the name to be more reflective of who it is, exactly is we are. But it gets a little bit confusing. And the roots go back to 1896 in terms of when this organization started. So, you know, there's a lot of history there, and there's not a lot of really any kind of will on both sides of the border to modify the structure of the AFM in any way, to screw around with that, you know, that history. But, you know, and as I said earlier, because of the laws in Canada, we operate as a different name in Canada to accommodate those differences.
So if I'm a Canadian musician, I'm working with the Canadian side. If I'm an American musician, I'm working with the American side. That's about as simple as it gets, kind of thing, right?
Pretty much.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you this, Rosalind. So Rosalind, like, you're the head of in a province. So like, you're in Newfoundland, you know, Canada has 10 provinces, 3 territories. Alan's sitting kind of at the head of like Canada itself. So do you guys operate the same way? Like, are these handed down to like all the provinces? Are provinces different? Can you tell me more specifically about what your duties are, Rosalind, as the Newfoundland representative?
Sure. Yeah. This is a great question because it is, it's kind of like there's a lot to it, right? We've been around for a long time and things are constantly evolving too. We don't have just one local per province. We actually have locals in certain areas of Canada, depending on the need and the want for members to join those locals. So we're lucky in Newfoundland and Labrador that we just have one local. But if we're speaking about Ontario, there's a bunch, right? Alan, do you know how many we have in Ontario?
It's 13.
13, wow, right? Okay, wow, yeah. And wow. And what's really cool about it too is that, you know, we are a democratic organization. So we are membership based. The members matter. Everything that is decided is according to what the members want. So we have 80,000 members in the AFM. Like, 80,000. That's a crazy number. It's a collective, right?
80,000 yeah. in the AFM. That means 80,000 dispersed between Canada and the United States?
You've yeah. got it. That's connected. And like, think about the power that has of voices unified. It's really, we work together as a team to make changes happen in our industry. And I think that's what I get the most excited about with the AFM. I mean, we'll get into all of the services we offer too, because it's fantastic. But that collective voice can make such a difference when it comes to lobbying the government and really creating change with our legislative work. You know, it's really fantastic. But I know your initial question was, what do I do in Newfoundland and Labrador for Local 820? I'd say I'm the person that's really serving our members and helping them connect the dots of what they need to do in their careers. I'd like to think of the AFM as, you know, the real kind of the mountain mover, the advocate, and also the organization that helps musicians really develop their careers over the long term. How, you know, we have an amazing musicians pension fund. It's called the Musicians Pension Fund of Canada. And it's a multi-employer pension fund. And musicians can be using this throughout their career to actually pay into a pension plan and have money upon retirement. This is something that I never even thought was possible until I became a part of the union. You know, the other aspects of what we offer instrument insurance and its coverage worldwide. It even covers if, you know, your van's broken into and you lose some of your merch, it'll help you with your merch. It'll help you if you need rental instruments for your next gig because everything's been stolen. You know, we have travel insurance, and the travel insurance is smart for musicians. So for example, like, you can actually book a plan of travel insurance where you can actually use it for a multiple number of tours, not just one. You know, we have affordable web hosting. We have, oh gosh, we have so much. It's crazy. I'm trying to think of it all. Health and dental insurance, liability insurance. You know, I could just keep going on, and I'm sure the rest will come up, but I feel like I've been talking too much. So I'm leaving it to you, Evan, and Alan, you start talking.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, it's a lot of information. And before I dive in and start going on to Alan here, I want to ask you something else, Rosalind. So if I'm a Newfoundland musician, and what is the capacity of why I would contact you directly instead of, say, contact the, you know, the overall body? Like, as a representative, am I contacting you directly for direct services, like, say, insurance or a claim or things like that? Like, what is the difference, the function?
So as a member, you're a member of your local. You can be a member of more than one local, but typically speaking, one member.
When you say that, you can be a member of more than one local. So there's a governing body, right? Which is the AFM, and in Canada, CFM, let's say. There's a governing body. I join that membership. And am I allocated to the office then in the region I live? Or how is that working?
Typically speaking, you would be a member of the local of where you live. That's okay. Typically speaking what we do, but we do have one local that is Local 1000, which is mostly for touring musicians who don't really consider themselves to be in one region, to be based in one region. But for the most part, if you live in Newfoundland and Labrador, you would become a member of the Newfoundland and Labrador local. And it, you know, it also really depends where you're getting your work. Like for example, the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra, all of the players in that orchestra are under a collective bargaining agreement that we negotiated with them. And we have them as members of Local 820.
Okay. So Alan, there's a lot to unpack here, and I guess we'll start from a really generalized kind of place. Can you tell me how this organization exists? Where did it come from? And what is the duty of the general duty of the overseeing body compared to the regional body that we just learned about?
Okay, sure. Well, as I said, we, you know, this organization came together in October of 1896. And it replaced several other, a scattering of different kinds of unions that were coming. This all was a result of the labor movement in the, you know, late 1800s. All kinds of unions popped up for all kinds of reasons, simply because, you know, they were being abused by employers, depending on what kind of work you were in. But musicians found the same reasons to get together, because there's a community of players. Musicians have a lot in common. Unlike some other kinds of laborers and workers in the world, there's a community of players. I mean, obviously you have to get together to have a band. So there's this camaraderie and there's this networking that is necessary. So the natural thing was to form an organization that would be an umbrella and protect everyone in their livelihoods. So the advent then became to have locals all across the country. At one point, we had over 450, simply because there was no such thing back then as television and recordings and things like that. Everything had to be live. So every little town, every little place that had any kind of a dance hall or had any kind of a community center would have a local that dealt with all the musicians that worked in that area. So it's streamlined itself. Now we're sitting at about 200 locals across the U.S. and Canada.
Wow.
25 of which are in Canada. And those services then emanate from the various locals. You asked Roslyn earlier about, you know, what the difference is. The locals are the conduit that lead to the major services that are provided by the AFMM. But locals have the ability to negotiate agreements within their community. So if there's a local television station, or if there's a theater or a symphony, as she mentioned, then those are under local jurisdiction, which and those locals can negotiate and have collective agreements within their region or their jurisdiction. We mentioned earlier that you can be a member of more than one local. That's because we have players that do work in all kinds of different locations, and they may be that they work in theaters or that they work in symphonies, and that those particular different locals have agreements with those entities, and there's a requirement to join the local to work under the collective agreement in that particular area, simply because you want the service. You know, it's difficult to have service from a central location for players in a specific environment like that. So there's things that the AFFM looks after that are specific to the overall. For instance, in Canada, we negotiate the agreements with the major broadcasters, with CBC and with CTV and our Bell Media and Rogers and the provincial ones like TVO and TFO. We negotiate with the National Film Board. And we were in the process of getting an agreement together with the Canadian Media Producers Association, which is the umbrella organization of all the independent producers. So these are services that happen from the international. And but the members themselves have a direct conduit to all of that by being members of a local, and can make a quick phone call or a quick visit to their local office, which is far more convenient for them. And the response, of course, is quicker. So that's it in general. But, you know, we can go into details.
Well, I mean, and I think that's part of the thing, to be really honest, is that I think there is just probably a massive amount of details, actually, is what I'm starting to learn here, is that there's a lot of things. If I'm a musician, there's a lot of things I can access. There's a lot of information I can take in. And it's obviously, this is a working, you know, this is for working musicians or people that work. This is also for people that generally work in the music industry as well. Like, is this like not like, cause I heard you mention producers. So this isn't just for like touring musicians, but this is also like, even for a guy like me, if I'm a conference organizer and I'm a consultant and these kind of things, is there something in the music? Can I be a part of the music union? Is that possible?
Not really. No, you'd have to be either a musician or a singer.
Okay.
Or a music prep person, you know, a copyist,
like working on the stage, that kind of thing. Like what about sound guy? Like, can a sound technician be a part of it?
We have taken in DJs in the past because they have a very similar structure, you know, working for the public. So they are eligible to join. We can take in lots of different kinds of people, but producers are not generally one of them because they end up being an employer as well.
Okay.
So, you know, it depends on which side of the fence you're sitting on. Now, having said that, we do have members that are producers as well because they're self-produced, or they're a member and they have a band. And one of the things they do is, they'll be the sound guy or the technician, if you will, the studio guy for other bands as well. So there's a lot of crossover, if you will, but specifically representing producers as an entity, no, that's not a part of the structure.
Okay, that's interesting. What can we talk about here when we talk about, like, how can we kind of get an idea of the general? Okay, so I'll have to edit this part because now I got to think about what I'm talking about. All right, because I'm just floating away here.
Let me just jump in and you can collect your thoughts for a second. Okay. But one of the things that I wanted to point out to is, Rosalind mentioned earlier that there's a huge menu of services and benefits, you know, and she mentioned,
yeah, please, let's talk about that. That's,
you know, there really is. There's a huge, I think what the last time I counted, there was like 54 different things that musicians can access that are meaningful to their careers. And those are a lot of the reasons that they become members. It could be they become a member because they want the P2 visa to cross into the US and get work there. It could be they want the very inexpensive instrument insurance to cover all the gear that they've got. There's a plethora of reasons that they join. But, one of the dangers of that is thinking that it becomes a transactional thing where, geez, if I become a member, I get all of this. And then the minute they think, oh, well, I don't need that anymore, then they would drop out. You know, there's that mentality. It's like, you know, shopping for certain things, and once you don't need it, you don't want it anymore. And that's a very dangerous thing for our members, is because then you have them bopping in and out and it's like a rent a union at that point in time. But the real philosophy behind a union is the collectivism and is the strength in numbers, as Rosalind pointed out. And so there, it's also very important not to think of the union as a transaction, but as a transformational way of networking with your other musicians and having some strength. You know, when we don't have, when we have an area where there's not a strong union, you have a situation where one band will go into a bar and play for, you know, $500. And then somebody else will say, oh, well, you know, I want that work, I'll do it for $400. And then the next band comes along and, oh, I'll do it for three. And you see the pattern here. It's a race to the bottom. And especially with the younger guys that are just getting started, that they'll do almost anything to get a gig. And you end up with that conflict between members that shouldn't be there. And it's an employer's breakfast, right? They set their own skin. Well, we're going to give you $50 and a beer. You know, well, you can't put a band on the road for $50. You just can't do it. And lots of these players don't understand that. So they have a very short term in the music business, or they end up having to get a job in order to support their music habit, or they end up, you know, relying on the parents to keep it going. And that's not where this should be. I mean, you're a professional musician and you have services to offer and you have a product, then, and you have to know what that is worth. And there has to be a level playing field out there, just like there is for any kind of product. So that's one of the things that is the glue that holds one musician to another, is this, you know, understanding that we're all members and we're all going to get together at meetings and we're all going to figure out what the market is out there. And we're all going to live by the same rules. We're going to all live by the same conditions and help each other in maintaining the industry. And that's how the ecosystem evolves into a better system, is by through the membership and through the strength in numbers. One of the things, the important things that happen on the national level, it was the AFFM in Canada that was the driving force behind changes in the Copyright Act in this country. And that evolved into changes to or the introduction of what was called status of the artist legislation. So now, because of all the lobbying and all the work that was done back in the late 80s and early 90s, as of 1997 in Canada, status of the artist legislation was enacted. And that means that you don't have to be an employee of a company in order to collectively bargain. All of the freelance musicians, all of the independent artists that are out there, by the virtue of the fact that they're part of the AFFM, can get together and compel an entity like CBC to come to the table and bargain an agreement for the services and benefits of all of the members. And that's unique. And that doesn't happen in the United States, and it happens in very few countries worldwide. But Canada is one of them, and that's a direct result of the hard work done by the union, as you know. And I say that in a kind of loving way, because people tend to third party the union and say, "Oh, the union made me do this," or "the union got in the way of this or that or the other thing." Let's remember that as a musician, you are the union,
right? So, and you belong to a collective at that point. And I got to tell you, I wish I would have kind of taken that road when I was a musician, because I did play live on CBC, I think three times, like in three different places in Canada. And each time I got a deduction for the, and they were like, "Are you part of the union? Give us your number." I was like, "No, I don't know. I don't know what it is." So, I mean,
and no one ever explained it to you, did they?
No, but I mean, yeah. when I started crazy. Going into Europe, I did have to find it, and I did have conversations. And one of the things that I found on the music union that I thought was really exciting is that there was a database of all these agents, like all these music agents and bookers and management. There was like this huge database. And I was like, "Holy crap. Like this is a massive resource." So I think people need to know that too. Like this, you know, the agency is such a big thing. You know, okay, so it's an umbrella. Well, it's a union. So if I work at a job, say I work on the docks. I hear seagulls right now. So I work on the docks, loading ships all the time. There's a union there. It protects my rights. It makes, you know, if the boss wants to fire me or something, they talk it out. I'm protected. I get my health benefits, dental benefits. So the music union's working like that. But at the same time, this is the music industry where you have to look for opportunity and you have to try to, you know, make deals and all these other things like this. So, I mean, and then there's the resource of the network. So is the music union now, I thought it was so interesting when you talked about how you can gather members and then collectively go to an organization like the CBC and say, "Hey, we'd like you to sit down let's talk about what's fair. Let's, you know, let's hash this out, what people should be paid, how we should work this out. Can you do this collectively, say with an agency or an enterprise of venues across Canada? Like, is there any way to like, is this already happening, or is this something that people can get together and they can actually, or say go inside of a MIA, like a music industry association, and say, hey, if we're going to do things with you guys, or like a showcase, if we're, you know, if you want our members to like participate in your event or with your company, we would like them to have a minimum of X, 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 and X or whatever. Tell me about that, Alan. Like how far does that go when members can get together and like make things happen?
It goes all the way. In terms of the booking agents, we have a booking agent agreement. And that list that we provide is agents that have signed on to that agreement. And at least you know when they've become signatory to that agreement that you're going to be treated fairly.
That is awesome. I don't mean to interrupt you, but this is just awesome information. Thank you.
Yeah, that's an important factor, you know, that you're dealing with an entity that is, you know, subject to our rules and regulations as well. You mentioned music industry associations. Yes, we do. We have negotiated with several of them. The East Coast Music Awards, we have the East Coast Music Association. We have an agreement with them, which specifies the amount that is paid for all the showcasing. And that's paid for the broadcast, et cetera. The same goes for Canadian Country Music Awards, that association. We have an agreement with them, which is an excellent agreement and provides as well for the broadcast that occurs on Global. And we have an agreement with the Junos as well, which provides for the showcasing of everything that happens during Juno Week, as well as the broadcast on CBC. And so, we have agreements with several of the industries and locals, the individual locals across the country also have relationships with them. Because as you know, for instance, we have the Music Performance Trust Fund, which is a pot of money that has been negotiated as a result of our deal with the record industry. We have a collective agreement with the major labels. And as a result of that, a portion of the money from streaming and from record sales when that was happening goes into this fund, and that's used to provide free music to the public every year. And it's this last year was somewhere between $8 and $10 million that was spent on live music. Wow. And it just keeps increasing because of course streaming keeps going up and you know the music industry is a healthy one and keeps rising. So that fund keeps getting bigger, and we use it in partnership with someone like the Saskatchewan Music Association, for instance. They will come to us and say, we'd like to put on some free concerts during, you know, Sask Music, and can we access the fund? And the fund will provide them with 50% of the wages that are necessary to pay all the musicians the proper scale for those performances.
Wow.
So they see us as a partner in making sure that, you know, musicians' careers are looked after. And while we don't do the same thing that music industry associations do, we do things that they can't even go near because right. of our ability to collectively bargain. So the two things coexist very well. And it's really important that in anyone's career in this country that you be a member of the AFFM.
No kidding. I'm gonna come to you, Rosalind, in a second, because I'm going to actually talk to you a little bit about if there's been negotiating with Music NL in that sort of way, that Music Newfoundland. But first, before I do that, I want to touch on this. Is like, okay, so SOCAN, let's say SOCAN, which is the Canadian, you know, licensing entity in Canada, they have agreements with like live venues. Let's say that if you're going to perform in a live venue, you know, in front of X amount of people, so many people, and you're going to play cover songs that you have to like register, you know, you have to register your performance. Well, you're supposed to anyways, right? Does this have anything to do with the union in the collection of that money or in the operation of this? And that's the first question. And the second question attached to that, like 1A here, is there venues that join the union? Like, is there a slot amount of venues where like artists will know that, you know, if the venue takes them in, they're guaranteed to make a certain amount of money.
Okay. The first part, SOCAN is a result of the Copyright Act, right? So they look after specific royalties for composers, songwriters, and publishing. That's the split, 50-50 to publishing, 50-50 to the composing, songwriting part. So that's an entity unto itself. We don't have anything to do with them in terms of their operation. And the same thing goes for ReSound, if you've heard of that organization. It looks after neighboring rights. So where SOCAN pays the composer and the publisher, ReSound pays every single musician on the recording and the label. And ReSound has three sub-collectives. One is Artisti in the province of Quebec. One is RAX, which is part of ACTRA. And one is MROC, which was started by the CFM in Canada. So, and we sit on the board of MROC, and we make sure that that's that there are musicians from different parts of the AFFM that are a part of that entity as well. So we are involved in the rights collection, the rights collection of certain types of rights in this country. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
Okay. So there's that part. In terms of there used to be all kinds of deals with bars and legions and restaurants that tied them to being to union services exclusively. However, that became illegal in this country when the Charter of Rights was passed, because it was then illegal for instance, a dance hall that had a collective agreement with us to rent its services out and require that the father of the bride had to have a union contract by virtue of the fact that the venue did.
Oh,
you couldn't third-party things, right?
Okay.
So now so you can't have a third party involved in a relationship like that. Now, we do have all kinds of clubs that hire exclusively AFM.
Through an agency.
Or through an agency, or direct.
Or directly, okay.
Because, you know, because we have, of course, contracts for all kinds of different things, but specifically what you're talking about is for live performance. And a live performance contract, you would normally say, oh, well, that protects the musician, but it also protects the club. You know, that's their guarantee that you're going to show up. That's your guarantee you're going to be on stage with X number of people and play for X number of hours and be, you know, that your volume is under the control of the club itself. Those are all things that are imminent, you know, emanating from that contract. So it's a two-way street. And those particular clubs get used to that. They like the idea that, you know, if a band doesn't show up, that they have a recourse through the AFFM. And that they don't have to go and sue through the courts and all of that stuff. They can go through us. It's a very simple process. And we can get them another band in a real hurry, too. So there's this symbiotic relationship. And the other thing, too, is, of course, you know, these clubs, at the end of the year, when they do their taxes, they've got to show what they spend on entertainment. And there's nothing easier than having a stack of AFM contracts to say, you know, here's what we spent. Here's the contracts with all the bands. So it's all their paperwork is done. So there's a lot of reasons why that, you know, they prefer to deal with us as well. If they say to a band, oh, we don't do contracts, then you better be careful of who you're dealing with. Because remember, they're signing contracts for the beer delivery and the liquor delivery and food delivery. They're signing contracts for all the stuff that they get. But if they're not willing to sign with you, then something's wrong. And that it's probably because they're not going to adhere to any kind of a pay schedule for you, or they're going to try and screw you around some way. So those are all important things to, you know, keep in mind.
That's excellent information. And again, I'm just kind of reminded like how resourceful the union is through what you're saying. I mean, this, I kind of wish it was a standard, to be honest, like the information that's coming out of you and the information we're sharing here. I really wish that the music industry from top to bottom had this kind of standard. It would eliminate so many problems in an artist's career. It would eliminate so many of these like drifting management people that are ripping people off and venues that are ripping people off. And, you know, I'm not saying all managers are bad. I'm not saying all venues are bad, but something like the AFM is there for a business world to exist inside of. And I just kind of wish that there was a way that we could mainframe the industry around it. Like, I wish we could just completely put a frame around the industry and say, hey, like, this is no different than going, you know, you're going to take your career seriously. Like, you're going to go work at a factory or go work at a warehouse or go be a police officer or whatever you're going to do. It's the same thing, you know, like you got to take your music career in the same, you know, in the same velocity. You got to handle it in the same way.
Rosalind. Hey, Evan, I have to interrupt you for 1 second while we're on this train of thought, because, you know, I'll give you a real life example of like how important this can be in our careers. I mean, we've, as musicians, we all have been burned, whether it's, you know, by a festival, a club owner, you name it, right? We've been burned because we don't have that paperwork in place. And we had a particular member, this was just a couple of years ago, that had a great contract with the club owner for multiple concerts. I think it was a full span of 1 year of regular concerts.
Wow.
And the club owner canceled on the member. And this was, you know, our members, like, you know,
bread and butter.
Really, exactly, right? You know, it meant a lot to them. And anyway, the member came to me and said, what can I do about this? And I was like, is it on AFM contract? Do you have a live performance contract from the AFM? And the member said, yes. And I was like, perfect. I can start to talk to the Toronto office and see what we can do about this. And immediately we went to bat for this member and even hired a lawyer for this member to make wow. sure that this was, you know, put through court. And the member got all of their money back. You know?
Oh my God.
So yeah, and didn't even have to play the gigs. So, you know, like it pays off to have that protection, right? With like, it's so important. I just last week I had a member call me and say, Rosalind, I just had a major corporate gig canceled. And, you know, our band lost so much money. What could we have done? And it was like, put it on paper. Then I could have done something for you, you know? So it happens all the time.
And I think the thing is, you know, like when I consult bands too, you know, because I'm working with a lot of bands around the world or giving a lot of information out, let's say, in different aspects of the music industry, is that one of the things that I put in any artist's head, like as a mantra, is like, you know, take this seriously, treat your band like a business, you know, treat your career like a business. And the union is a definite, most definite way to be treating your artist career like a business. And I'm definitely going to be putting this in other people's heads as well, because now the more I'm learning about it, the more I want other people to know about it. And I think the thing is that, again, this creates a standard. Like, this is a standard. And if we have a business standard in this industry, there goes the chaos. Bye-bye. No more chaos. We're all operating on a standard, you know? And that's the one thing the music industry is absolutely missing, in my own opinion. Now, I'm going to ask you this, Rosalind. Can you give me some examples how you have worked in association with a music industry association, like your office?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a wonderful relationship with Music NL. We're really fortunate that way.
So let's just mention Music NL is what's called a music industry association. It's a government funded body who collects members and tries to get them opportunities for marketing, touring. They run export initiatives, this kind of stuff. That's what a music industry association, you know, a very simple explanation of what it is. Now, we're talking about the local in Newfoundland and Labrador, which is Roslyn, the local for the AFM, working with this music industry association in Newfoundland and Labrador. So yeah, please tell us about, you know, how you've collaborated or, you know, give us some insight there.
Big part of it is collective voice. By working closely with both organizations working together, we have a collective voice in the province that helps protect our artists more. So that's really great. But we can even do initiatives that can help increase the professional development and help musicians really focus on their careers as being business people. So we actually have done this series twice now, and we're in the midst of our second run of it. It's called Making Music Work. And we've actually been putting on different webinars each month, focusing on different aspects of being a professional musician. This has been so great for our members, and it's also been really great for our Music NL members in the province. Another really great initiative we did is we actually used the Music Performance Trust Fund to put on some wonderful live stream events during Music NL Week. And these were, you know, some of the musicians that got these opportunities, it was their first performance since the pandemic hit, and they got paid substantially for it, and they got a pension contribution made on their behalf for it. Wow. So this, you know, these are like really amazing things that we can do when we work together. It's fantastic.
That is incredible. And again, I'm just kind of blown away by, again, the fact that this is kind of like puts everything at equal playing ground. And I'm so impressed also that you guys are working, you know, in connection with the Music Industry Association to let their members know that, hey, we're here. You know, we have all these different resources, these different ways that you can make your music a music business. And it's so essential. So essential, you know, from where I'm coming from, you know, that I'm like, I'm dealing with people in the independent sector all the time. I just see so many gaps where they're falling through these cracks every step of the way, you know, like whether it's like, again, people ripping them off, them not having the proper information of how to go about things. I mean, it just sounds like the industry is an amazing resource, but it also sounds like the union is an amazing friend, let's say, you know, like a collaborator, you know, inside of your music business. Alan.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, please, Rosalind, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, you know, it's just a lot, like on the ground, you know, being a performer myself and kind of hearing talk around the community, I'll hear this a lot. I'll hear people say, well, you know, our music industry association, you know, has all the money. They give all the grants and they give all these opportunities for, you know, us getting further in our careers. Why would we join the AFM when it's so much more expensive? And, you know, we're not getting the same kind of services. And Alan pinpointed this, and I think it's really important to kind of reiterate, is that, like, you know, you got to be a member of both. It's one of these things. You've got to have it all in order to really be a true professional in our industry. You know, like, actually, having a pension plan, having instrument insurance, having health insurance, these are all things, you know, that normal employees, if we're working for the government, you know, this is just a given in our job. But like,
if we're a welder, you know, if we're a carpenter, you know? yeah.
It's like, and we're entitled to this as working musicians as well. And I think that people really have to stop thinking about all the services that they get, but more like, how do they want to envision their professional lives as working artists for the rest of their lives?
This is a really good point. And I want to really kind of focus on what you said, because it's actually like a really quotable phrase. I think Alan was touching on this a lot earlier, but let's really say that again, Roslyn, is that like, it's not about what they can take out of the union, but it's about how they envision their career. Like, you know, the being a professional, right? Being a professional that's working for money, that is going to handle their career in a professional capacity. That means being organized, right? Be organized with your career. Like, get yourself organized. You're going to organize your website, and you're going to organize your band. You're going to organize the people you work with. Is the union is a part of that organization? You know, it's
exactly.
And I think it's actually it's systemic, right? Like, this is systemic to your career. So the thing is, like, if you're going to even attempt to have a career in the music industry, you should be working by the standard. You should be working in something that you have to organize your career. And I think the union is a part of that organizing, just like if you do your gigs, like we're talking about, get a contract. You know, if you're going to work with somebody, get a contract, get the writing. If the bar is willing to sign the contracts for beer and liquor and everything else, like Alan was saying, they should be willing to give you a contract. I mean, this is really not complicated, right? I mean, and now as an artist, do you guys supply any kind of contracts? Like, can I download PDFs and send it over to the venue and say, hey, if you want me to work, sign this? Tell me about that. Tell me about that.
Do you want to go into it, Alan?
Well, sure. We've got contracts that cover all the different kinds of work that you do.
Awesome.
If you're specifically talking about a live engagement contract, you know, for a bar gig or whatever, we have that. And it's interesting that that contract also says there can't be any recording, broadcast, or transmission of that performance without a different AFM contract being in place. So there's not going to be cable TV or a movie producer running around picking up content for free. It's without your permission and without a contract that would ensure that you get paid for that. If you do CBC work, that's a TV radio contract. And of course, it covers new media as well. If you're doing a movie score, there's a different contract for that. If you're doing a jingle, there's a different contract for that. Everything that you do has a different agreement that covers it and has a specific contract that relates to that particular agreement, because all that work is different. And each one can emanate different results. For instance, if you do a CD and you've released a CD or you've got it available for download, you would file what we call a B4 contract, which is related to the recording agreement that we have, the sound recording labor agreement. Now, in that agreement are specific provisions that say if that music is used in something else, for instance, a jingle or a movie score or a TV show, you've got to be paid a specific rate for that kind of repurposing of your music. So it's not just the sync fees that are available through copyright or the master rights that you can get, which are all emanating from copyright, but now you're going to get a whole different revenue stream that's based on contract law that emanate from our agreements. So it doubles and triples the amount of money that is available to you if you're in this industry.
Wow.
And that's extremely important to musicians because, lots of them are not taking advantage of all these different revenue streams, and things end up getting very tight, as you can well imagine. You know, it costs money to put a CD together. It costs money to tour. And unless you're taking advantage of everything that's available, money can get tight. But these are ways that open it up and allow for a fair amount of freedom and a fair amount of income. You just have to do the paper. So that's what we tell everybody. Just as you said earlier with the contract, you know, it's a no-brainer. You just do the paper.
Now, where can I get these contracts? Can I download them off the website? Do I contact somebody? How do I get them?
Both. You can either contact your local if you want paper copies of them, or you can go to our website and download them right from the member section.
And where can I find you guys on the website? Does each office, like you guys have like over 200 and you said 25 in Canada. Does each 25 in Canada have their own website, or is it all centralized around the one AFM, or does everyone both have their own website? Yeah.
No, they're both. Okay. Many locals have their own websites. Most locals have their own website.
So you guys are like the music gang. Like you're like the music, the music industry gang. Like you're all connected across, you know, right across the board, right? Like
we're the police, man.
You know, 80,000 strong.
No kidding. Wow.
But no, I wasn't kidding in that. I'll just tell you, you know, one thing you were talking about earlier about, you know, a relationship with the Music Industry Association, and Rosalind touched on, well, you have to be a member of both. And you'll have some members that say, oh, well, you know, why do I need the union? I've got them. But let's not forget that a Music Industry Association is comprised of producers, managers, radio stations, music stores, venues, all of which are employers.
Employers. And that's the difference. A music represents the employees. Where
exactly.
And the other side of the coin is the employers, right? So
right. Keep them honest.
Okay. You keep the employers honest to the employees. So if anyone is passing money, the person that's receiving the money is the person that should be having the union subscription. They're the person that should be subscribed to the union if you're the one receiving the money. Okay, so that's really clear. We have to make that clear. If you make the money, you're the person that belongs to the union, and the union is your bodyguard, or it's your it's your big brother. The union's the big brother, yeah? I think that's what it is.
Kinda. That's as good as any analogy, yeah.
Yeah.
But, let's not forget, though.
Yeah.
Oh, that, you know, things have opened up over the years, and that's not specifically the delineation any longer, because we have lots of musicians that are self-producing now.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they're the composer, they're the
employee engineer of themselves. Right. They're
exactly,
because they're playing both sides of the fence, right? They're wearing different hats all the time.
That's exactly right. And in many cases, they become a little incorporated entity, and they kind of hire themselves to do all this stuff. And guess what? They're still eligible for pension doing it that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got this thing covered, you know, top to bottom. We got this covered. It's just, you know, one of the major problems we have is getting the word out, the education, you know, because musicians, there's always young guys coming online, and then we have to start this whole education process over again. But it costs a lot of money in a union to organize.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot of those big unions spend 25% of their income every year just organizing and getting out there and spreading the word and getting people to understand what it is that they do. If we spent that kind of money on organizing, you know, our dues would have to go up exponentially. As it is, we're a very, very inexpensive organization to join. I mean, the average dues is $150 a year. So that's, you know, and of course that's, you know, that's deductible as well on your taxes, but whatever. But that's very inexpensive. And we rely on musicians saying and networking with each other and saying, look, you know, our band's in the union and you should be as well. Let's all get this together. Let's all do it properly. We rely on that. And unfortunately, sometimes the chain breaks a little bit and you end up with you know, a pocket of people that are not members. And as I say, it's really expensive to do the organizing. So we count on the good graces of our members and the fact that they're happy being members with getting the word out there.
Well, I think, you know, I got a couple of thoughts on that. And one thing is, I think this showcase conferences, like even like what I'm doing, I think they need to incorporate you guys more. And I think that you guys need to be a big part of them, because I think that, you know, showcase conferences are, you know, independent musicians coming in, working with music professionals or trying to, and they're auditioning and they're literally going to go to these panels and try to get information. I think that there should be some sort of association with the union, because I think it should be a standard that musicians are signing up for this. I think that, you know, from the information I've gathered from you today and understanding that the music industry is a entrepreneurial free base, you know, where like you have an instrument, you have a love for what you're doing. You and your friends decide to get together, start playing songs, or you're just doing it by yourself. People respond to that. They like it. All of a sudden now, you know, you're starting to play in front of people. Now you're taking on marketing strategies. Now you're getting logos and trying to develop something to, you know, travel. And it's like, wait. You went from having fun in your basement or around a campfire with your friends. Now it's a business. Now if it's making money, it's a business. And these people have to know straight away. They need to know straight away. There's a union. Hey, you know, you're making money now. There's a union. There's people that are going to protect you and work with you. And there's resources and all these kind of things that we're talking about today. You know, so I think it's the responsibility of music industry people to be talking about the standard of the music industry. And I really want to emphasize that because I think, like, now that I know about this in the capacity I do, now I have to reference this. Like, if I don't reference it, I'm not being honest. You know, like, I think the thing is when we, you know, you jokingly said, yeah, we're the police, but like, really, it's about having an honest industry, you know? And I mean, that's also a big reason why I wanted to do this podcast. I wanted to talk to people all around the world about what they're doing in their job. And I just wanted the truth out of them. I just want to have an honest discussion about what's going on and what, you know, what's happening. And talking to you guys, I think that is a fundamental part of somebody's career if they're going to have a career. So,
yeah.
I mean, so eye-opening, right? I mean, this has been such an eye-opening experience. I don't want to keep you guys forever. I mean, we've already been going now for about an hour. Let's wrap this up. Like, give me some final thoughts, Rosalind. Like, talk to me about some things that I should know about, musicians should know about, what's going down. And then Alan, let's do the same thing with you and let's wrap this up. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
It's our pleasure, Evan. I would, you know, I wear many hats in the industry. This is just one of my hats, obviously as a performer, also as a teacher, also as a music producer. So kind of looking out of my realm, how I really benefit from having an AFM membership is that I feel like I have a voice in our industry. And to me, that is so crucial. I also feel like I'm protected. And I also feel like I am living as a professional. You know, it's been a real eye-opener to go through the negotiating process for the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. And we have, the first collective bargaining agreement with them that's ever been done for an orchestra in Newfoundland. And going through this process, especially during, we just got the collective bargaining agreement in place just before the pandemic hit. And, you know, we're talking, this is one of the largest employers of musicians in Newfoundland and Labrador is the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. And, you know, to find a way to protect those musicians through this agreement, like they have sick days, they have a guaranteed fee per service, you know, they have a guaranteed number of services that they have to work. To go through that process of putting that into place and then having the pandemic hit and all of a sudden they don't have a venue they can perform in, the symphony's scrambling to figure out what's going to happen with all of this, but they had an agreement in place. They had to find creative ways to make this work for their symphony.
You and literally protected them. Like before it hit the pandemic, they were protected professionally going into it.
Yes, going into it. And you know what? I had tears in my eyes a couple of weeks ago because I saw directly what having this agreement in place made this happen. It was phenomenal because you know what? The orchestra's done a fantastic job of reinventing how they're going to have, you know, their concerts online. And I mean, the NSO like really did an amazing job throughout this entire pandemic.
Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra, right?
NSO. You got it. The Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra, the NSO. And, you know, they really did a great job, but they still hadn't met the number of performances that were guaranteed in the collective agreement for the players. So you know what? A couple of weeks ago, everybody got big checks for the remaining amount that they were entitled to
for the year,
even though they weren't booked for those concerts. Like to see that happen, like it was like bingo. That's
saved people, just families, one small saved their jobs, reason. Like,
I mean, it guaranteed their livelihood. It guaranteed that they could get through this. You know, and one thing I really want you to talk about, Alan, is just, you know, Alan is like such a solid, solid human being that has done such amazing things for our Canadian music community. Like, Alan will never speak on about this, but he really is like, he is one of our musical heroes in Canada. And I can't say enough amazing things about this man. And one thing that I've seen him do through the entire pandemic is just go to bat for the music community, especially with the federal government. You know, we would not be in the place that we are in our music community right now, where we're able to pay our bills, where we're able to actually be okay without Alan's help. And I really hope you touch upon that, Alan. But, you know, I guess that's what I'm trying to say is, you know, the services are amazing for the AFM. I am always in my office and happy to talk with anyone who wants to learn more about what we can provide that way. But this is such a bigger picture experience that people have to think about. And the biggest thing is that you have a voice in the industry, and we invite you to use it through our collective.
Well, I'm going to definitely be calling you after this interview, Rosalind, to talk. So I got a hundred questions myself, and I want to get involved somehow. So no, and please, Alan, please do go ahead, and please do take your time and tell us, give us your story and give us your thoughts, please.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll just jump on where Rosalind left off. This COVID pandemic has been an absolute disaster, as you can imagine, for live music and for arts in general. The day this thing was announced was the day the work stopped. And an example of that was the Juno Awards. They were slated to go in Saskatoon last year when the pandemic hit, and so they had to reschedule the Junos themselves, and the broadcast went on. But as you may remember, Juno week, there's hundreds of musicians that play live during the week leading up to the award show itself, and all of those had been contracted to perform, and every single one of them was canceled. Except that, of course, as I mentioned earlier, there's a collective agreement with the Junos, and every single one of those musicians was paid 100% of their wage.
Wow.
So that's the kind of, you know, support that happens from the AFFM. In terms of the lobbying that we've done, it became really obvious when this pandemic hit that musicians were going to be just really devastated. There was just nowhere to work. Everything was closed up. We formed a small coalition called the Live Arts Coalition with Canadian Actors Equity, IATSE, and the Designers Guild, and ourselves, the Canadian Federation of Musicians, and put together our heads and lobbied government. And where previously independent artists were not going to be eligible for any of the subsidies emanating from the government during this COVID time, we managed to make sure that they were covered. And so that was an excellent thing that happened for our players. I was surprised that there wasn't a bigger uptake than there was of musicians. But by the same token, you know, well over half of them that were out of work were able to access those subsidies. And as of today, we're still lobbying government because this industry is not going to be back up and running until this thing is over and until full crowds are allowed to gather. And so, you know, it's all those subsidies are slated to end in September, and we're constantly lobbying with government and making sure that they understand that they had better keep this thing going, as at least for the performing arts segment, because this COVID thing is not over. And it's, and until crowds are allowed to gather at 100% capacity, it's not going to be good for musicians. So that has been one of our major pushes over the last while. And there's been some other things that we've had to lobby for. For instance, you know, film and television production. When COVID hit, there wasn't one insurance company that would insure a production, so they couldn't proceed with any of it. So we were one of the folks that lobbied with the employer this time to go to government and say, "Look, will you back up the insurance companies on this and provide some safety? And here's all the safety and health protocols we'll put into place for film and TV production." To make sure that the sets are safe, but you know, you've got to back the insurance. And so we came to an arrangement with the federal government to make sure that insurance was in place and film and TV production carried on. Otherwise, that would have been another part of the industry that was absolutely destroyed. So, you know, all these things happen in the background, and it takes up infinite amounts of time and infinite amounts of, you know, lobbying and Zoom calls and letter writing to make things happen. But that's part of the organization. That's part of what we have to do to make sure that it's, that there's a level playing field for our players out there. And, you know, the interesting thing, of course, is that we lobby on behalf of our members, but it's all musicians that end up benefiting from these efforts. And hopefully, you know, they understand that. And if they all joined, think of the immense power that we could have in terms of regulating the industry and supporting each other and networking if everybody was on board. But as it is, you know, we have a small percentage of the members of the players that are members, but then we have, you know, 100% of the people that are full time. It's just, you know, the part-time guys, the weekend warriors that are not so much, they feel they're independent artists and they operate that way, but it's too bad that they don't get it as well. I guess that's part of our organizing and our education thing, is to make sure that we make that push and that everybody understands what's at stake.
Well, and I thank you so much for that, Alan. And thank you so much for your work, because I think you really said something there that kind of resonates with me, and that's about regulation. You know, like if we regulated this, and I mean, it's like an activity, it's an idea, it's our creative, it's a creative resource, our music, our participation in playing live, and our love of live music and our love of performing in front of people, is that it's not just an idea. It's not just something that people do. I think it needs to be regulated. I think people need to think of it in a way that it needs to be regulated. Like, this should be regulated, that it's something that you enter into, you know, like it's not just something you pick up and you start doing, like you just start playing baseball one day, you know, like if you're going to be performing in front of people, I think you're going into, you know, you're going into this metaphysical house that should be regulated, the metaphysical house of the music industry. You know, like the music industry should be a regulated business. And I think the more that music professionals push that agenda and talk about that agenda, I think the more that becomes a potential reality. So I really want to thank both of you for talking with me today and giving me so much fruitful information and really opening my eyes and really making me see the potential of a format, the potential of a standard, the regulation of having, you know, a part of being able to talk to musicians, not only about opportunities around the world, but to take their career as something that they need to take, just like anybody else takes their career. And that's to work alongside with the big brother, the union. So thank you. Thank you very much for your music industry insights. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us, Evan.
It's our pleasure.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.